thankful for this opportunity for sure. And we're going to talk about communication one more time. Surprise, surprise. So this is really a deep dive. I mean, I think we've almost done 10 weeks or so on what the Bible has to say about communication. So we're all basically experts. Now I wish it worked like that. It's a long time to talk about any subject, but this subject we know is super important biblically. And last week we got an illustration of why it's important. And it's important because we're not on our own. We represent Jesus. We don't belong to ourselves. We represent Jesus. And so this is an area that has a lot of power and a lot of significance. And so we need to talk about communication for a long time. But I was thinking this morning, in all the talking that we've done about communication, I wonder if I have defined it. I'm not sure that we've defined what communication is. So how would you do that? What is communication? What is effective communication? What is involved in communicating? How would you define it if you had to define it? Speaking and being heard. Listening. Conveying a message. Yeah, so speaking and being heard, would you say you're communicating if you're speaking in English to somebody who knows Mandarin and he hears hears the sounds of your sees your mouth moving? So when we think about communication, it involves speaking and being heard, but we would probably take it a step further than that, right? Especially communicating effectively.
Transfer of thought or idea.
Yeah, so there's a thought in your head and you want to try to get it into somebody else's head in a way that they understand what you meant. Here's a couple definitions I found. One definition is the word communication comes from the Latin word communis, or common. When people communicate, they come to have something in common. They share meaning. They both understand what is being said in the same way. Another definition, the process by which thoughts and information are exchanged between individuals and groups through systems of language, sign or signals, gestures, and behavior in general. And so what stands out from those definitions? You probably heard sharing meaning. So we're communicating when both you and I share meaning, when we understand what's being said the same way. The one was longer, exchanging thoughts through systems of language, signs or signals, gestures and behaviors. If we were to break that down a little more specifically, we would say when someone wants to communicate, they have a message, they want the other person's to understand if that's going to happen, the person communicating has to identify words or gestures that he believes mean something, and he chooses those words or gestures to share with someone else. But it doesn't stop there, because the person who's listening then has to give meaning to the words or gestures. And if they are not actively interpreting the words or gestures, one might as well be speaking to a wall. And so it's like the speaker has a meaning in his mind, and he has to choose words to encode that meaning and transmit them to someone else. And the words or the gestures are like the vehicle that he's putting the message in to take to someone else, and the person receiving that message has to then decode that message in their heads, like open the door and let the meaning out so they can understand what was originally in the speaker's mind. And so that's what we're doing when we communicate. And it's really, really hard. It's really hard. People are always saying something, and other people are just as frequently hearing something different. I may have told you about the professor who said, if communication can fail, it will fail. If communication cannot fail, it still most usually fails. If communication seems to succeed in the intended way, there's a misunderstanding. If a message can be interpreted several ways, it will be interpreted in a manner that maximizes the damage. There's always someone who knows better than you what you meant by your message. The more we communicate, the worse communication succeeds. That's one of the blessings of living overseas, is that you just realize after a while, when you think you got your message across, you'd wait for it, that people didn't understand what you were saying. And so you just learn that you have to be really patient and work hard. The trick sometimes when you live where people speak the same language is you think it's easier. And often it's not really much easier, actually. And yet, in spite of how difficult it is to communicate, obviously difficult, people often think superficially about the process. As one man says, we take communication for granted. Communication largely happens unconsciously, like the shining of the sun or the plumbing system in our home or the circulation of blood in our body. We don't even notice such vital systems until they break down. And so I want to talk tonight just about one part of the communication system that I think we often overlook and actually makes getting your message across difficult and creates lots of problems, I think, without us even realizing it, and that is nonverbal communication. So what we say is important, obviously, but there's more to communication than just what we say. We're always communicating. Everything we do, everything we say, every mannerism, every facial expression, the way we sit, the way we stand, the way we dress, everything about us that is interpretable by others communicates something. And so we want to get a message across. Obviously, words are an important way we do that, but there are other options. Someone said, studies have shown that verbal language accounts for only a small percentage of what we communicate. One scholar adds, communication specialists estimate that 2/3 to 3/4 of all communication is nonverbal. The average varies from culture to culture, but what this statistic essentially means is that a person communicates in great part by their nonverbal behavior, behavior being gestures, facial expressions, tone of voice, dress, body language. Our culture teaches us that behavior from birth, and most of the behavior is unconscious. This is what really makes it tricky going to other cultures, because you have learned a certain way of communicating nonverbally, and you've been given meanings to those nonverbal behaviors, and then you're in a different culture, and they, a lot of times they have completely different meanings to their nonverbal behaviors. And so you just so much miscommunication. In addition to the words we intentionally use, the scholar says, through our behavior, we unconsciously communicate during all the waking hours that we spend with other human beings. And that's not just something that we observe as we look out at other people or interact with different cultures. The Bible actually highlights the importance of nonverbal communication. And so this is kind of fun, but the Bible makes clear that a person's nonverbal actions and reactions can communicate something about them. And so they may not even be intending to communicate something to someone, but their nonverbal behavior gives information about them to others. And so I want to look at a number of passages to illustrate that. And we can begin with Genesis chapter 3, verse 8. So we're going to just be turning in our Bibles. Genesis 3, 8. You know this story, of course. This is the fall, and Adam and Eve have just sinned, and they hear the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And it says, and the man and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God among the trees of the garden. So what is the nonverbal behavior in that passage? So they hid themselves when they heard God. And what does that communicate? They don't want to be near God. Why does Adam say he did it? He did it because he was afraid. Genesis chapter 4, verses 4 and 5 says, and the Lord had no regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering, the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering. But for Cain and his offering, he had no regard. So Cain was very angry, and his face fell. And God comes and he says, why are you angry, and why has your face fallen? So nonverbal behavior. He's angry, and how do we know he's angry? Or what happens as a result of his anger? His face falls, whatever exactly that means. But there's something on his face that demonstrates he's angry. Other times, though, so that's kind of unintentional, you might say. There's information that God is observing from the person's nonverbal behavior that tells us something about what's going on in their heart. Other times, the nonverbal behavior is intended to communicate something. So if you go over to 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 27... This is Samuel's just told Saul he's rejected, because he's rejected God's word, the Lord has rejected him as king, and Samuel turns to go, and verse 27 says, as Samuel turned to go away, Saul seized the skirt of his robe, and it tore. And so Saul is wanting to communicate something there. He's wanting to communicate to Samuel, don't go, don't just leave me like this. And as a to communicate that, he grabs the skirt of his robe, and that was intentional. So once you start looking for nonverbal communication like that, whether it's intentional or whether it's we're just learning information from people's nonverbal behavior, you will start to find so many different examples in the Bible. It's like it's everywhere, actually. And so let me show you some. Part of why I'm doing this is because I think that we minimize nonverbal behavior, nonverbal communication, and it actually to our own detriment. So I just want to show you that this is something that the Bible just assumes is a powerful way to communicate. Genesis 32:6, Esau's coming to meet Jacob with 400 men. And that communicated something to Jacob. And actually, it was not what Esau was intending to communicate. But it says, verse 7, then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he actually took action as a result of that. Genesis 37:3 is the story of Jacob and Joseph. And Joseph gives Jacob a unique coat. And what was the result of that nonverbal behavior? His brothers became jealous, and it ended up really splitting the family apart. Genesis 39:7 is the story of Joseph and Potiphar's wife. And it says, now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, and after a time his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph. And actually it says she raised her eyes to Joseph. And so that's nonverbal communication, and said, now verbal, lie with me. And then he communicated as well. What does it say he did? But he left his garment in her hand and fled out of the house. And she knew what that meant when he ran away and left the garment there. He was making a statement. Joshua chapter 7, verse 6. This is a little like when I had a class on prayer in seminary, and the guy looked at every single time people prayed in the Bible. He's like, they prayed on their knees, they prayed in the room, they prayed. But there was a point, and I hope there's a point to this. But Joshua 7:6, it says, this is where Israel's defeated at Ai because of someone's sin, and yet Joshua doesn't know that part yet. And so all he knows is that they lost a terrible battle, and this is how they respond, Joshua 7:6. Then Joshua tore his clothes and fell to the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord until the evening, he and the elders of Israel, and they put dust on their heads. And so you can imagine, he's on the ground, he's torn his clothes, they're picking up dust, and they're literally putting it on their heads. And so they're communicating something. Sorrow, grief, confusion. So we tend to minimize the importance of nonverbal communication, and I think there might be something weird about that sometimes. There's something not quite right. The Bible's very honest about humans. Like, if you're sad, it's appropriate to communicate that. There's ways to appropriately communicate that nonverbally. The word for worship begins with the word for bow in Hebrew. There was a physical expression of a non-physical kind of reality because we're physical, spiritual beings. Ruth chapter 4, verse 7, Boaz is attempting to rescue Ruth, and it's this whole long story. But there's a purchase of a property that's involved, and he's talking to someone who has a right to purchase that property first. And the writer of Ruth explains how the process worked. He says, "Now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm a transaction, the one drew off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was the manner of attesting in Israel." So that's a nonverbal behavior. Taking off your sandal and giving it to someone else actually communicated something important that like had financial implications. 1 Samuel 18, verse 4 is a story about Jonathan and the way that he loved David. And how did he communicate that? He actually stripped himself of his own robe and he gives it to David. Also, he gives David his sword, his armor, his bow, and his belt. 1 Kings chapter 21, verse 4. Ahab becomes upset. He goes to bed. He turns his face to the wall and he refuses to come to dinner. And Jezebel, his wife, interprets that behavior. And she knows what it means. And she says, "Why are you so angry? Why is your spirit so vexed?" 2 Kings chapter 19, verses 1 and 2. Hezekiah, he's the king of Judah. He's threatened by messengers from Assyria, and listen to how he responds. 2 Kings 19:1. "As soon as King Hezekiah heard it, he tore his clothes and covered himself with sackcloth and went into the house of the Lord. And he sent Eliakim, who was over the household, and Shebna, the secretary, and the senior priest covered with sackcloth to the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amos." So he wanted to communicate something, and he didn't just say go with words. He actually had him get dressed, all his guys get dressed up in a funny outfit, like a bag, and then they could go. Because getting dressed up in a sackcloth was part of what he wanted, part of how he wanted to communicate. And we'll get practical here in a minute, but 2 Kings 19:21 gives us a different example of nonverbal behavior. God responds to Hezekiah's request, and he begins by talking about the people threatening them. It says, "She despises you, she scorns you, the virgin daughter of Zion. She wags her head behind you, the daughter of Jerusalem." So the wagging of the head was a way of scorning. It was a way of mocking someone. Ezra chapter 9, verse 3. Ezra hears about these sins the people are committing, and this is what he does. Ezra 9, 3. As soon as I get there, it says, "As soon as I heard this, I tore my garment and my cloak and pulled my hair from my head and beard and sat appalled." And so this is a grown man, and he's actually literally pulling hair from his head and sitting on the ground, which was a way of saying something. Verse 6, when he talks to God, Ezra 9, 6, it says, he says, "Oh my God, I'm ashamed and I blush to lift my face to you, my God." So lifting your head or not wanting to lift your head before God are saying something. Nehemiah chapter 5, verse 13. Nehemiah hears about the people oppressing the poor and he responds and he tells them to return the money and the things they had taken. And he said, they say he will, they will. And then he warns them what will happen if they don't. And you know what he does? He says, "I shook out the fold of my garment. And I said, so may God shake out every man from his house and from his labor who does not keep this promise." So he shakes the fold of his garment as a way of communicating. Psalm 22:7, the psalmist is talking about these people who despise him in Psalm 22:7. And he says, "All who see me mock me. They make mouths at me, they wag their heads," which was similar to what we saw earlier, the wagging of the head, however you wag a head. Psalm 41:9, the psalmist is being betrayed, and he says, "Even my close friend in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, has lifted his heel against me." So there's two nonverbal behaviors there. Eating bread together, a meal together, was a physical way of communicating, we're close. There's communion. Not just that you were my friend, we ate bread together. That's a nonverbal behavior. And then his friend who he ate bread with betrayed him. And how did he describe that? He lifted his heel against me. And he uses that phrase because that's a nonverbal way of communicating. You've turned against someone. If we keep going to the prophets, Jeremiah chapter 14, verse 3, the people are suffering, and this is how they respond. God says, her nobles send their servants for water. They come to the cisterns. They find no water. They return with their vessels empty. They're ashamed and confounded and cover their heads. So covering their heads was a way of communicating shame and frustration. Jeremiah 18:16, the land of Israel is going to be judged because of the people's idolatry, and God describes what's going to happen. He says, my people have forgotten me, making their land a horror, a thing to be hissed at forever. Everyone who passes by it is horrified and shakes his head. So shaking the head was a way of communicating horror and hissing. Lamentations 2:15 says the same thing. All who pass along the way clap their hands at you. They hiss and wag their heads at the daughter of Jerusalem. And those are just a few from the Old Testament. I was actually merciful here. There's like, we could really have gone through every book much more in depth. The New Testament shows similar things. I won't go through the New Testament, but Luke 18 is a really familiar one where Jesus tells that story about the Pharisee and the tax collector. And the tax collector feels a conviction of sin. And you remember how you know it? Besides what he says, be merciful to me, a sinner, what else does he do? He beats his breast. He stands far away from everyone else. He's hanging his head. Nonverbal communication in the Bible is clearly a thing. Not only do people communicate nonverbally, actually God does. Romans 1:20 tells us, for his invisible attributes, namely, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So there are certain attributes of God that he loudly communicates through creation, and that's nonverbal. Psalm 19 actually talks about the heavens declaring the glory of God, and they're not actually literally talking. So nonverbal communication is definitely a thing we see in the Bible. And it's something that communicates a lot of different realities. So we saw fear being communicated nonverbally, sorrow, anger, shame, guilt, love, horror, pity, scorn, pride, conviction of sin, compassion, all can be communicated nonverbally. And it has an impact. It has an impact. Nonverbal behavior has an impact, just like words have an impact. Nonverbal behavior has an impact. Cain was rebuked for his nonverbal behavior. Joseph's brothers were jealous and sold him into slavery. Some of that had to do with their father's nonverbal behavior. God responds to Joshua's humbling himself the way he did by revealing why Israel had been punished, and on and on. When we think about communication, we probably wouldn't first think about how am I communicating nonverbally. But the Bible does talk about nonverbal communication, and as servants of Jesus who want to think about the way we communicate, we need to think about this area as well, because it definitely has an impact. Imagine, you know, just for silly, because I can think of this because of Africa. In Africa, when you want to show honor to somebody, you don't look them in the eyes. So you would normally, if somebody's teaching you, you know, this is, now it's changing because cultures are merging with each other, but often people were trained, you know, if somebody's teaching you something and you want to show them respect, you keep your head down like this. And so I grew up, man, my parents must have spent years trying to get me to look in people's eyes, and I would have been a good African because I did not look like looking people in the eyes, but we would practice and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And so now if I'm teaching and people are looking down like that, my read of that nonverbal behavior is maybe not so much disrespect, but just like boredom, like they're not even engaged. And yet they're actually trying to teach, they're trying to say to me something very different. But if I interpret it wrong, poorly, then I'm tempted to respond and to treat people maybe like, hey, guys, what's, you know, that would be very wrong if I was like that. But hey, guys, what's going on? So nonverbal behavior really is something that we find in the Bible that has an impact. And so I want to just point out a couple things you need to know about the way you communicate nonverbally, and then think about what to do about it. So first thing to understand about nonverbal behavior is that it's continuous. So we can't help it. Sometimes we're doing it intentionally, but even when we're not, we need to realize we are always telling people something through our nonverbal behavior. With our eyes, with the expressions on our faces, by the way we dress, the way we sit or stand, by our body posture, what we do with our time, what we do with our money, what we laugh at, by our willingness to help or not help, the way we help. I remember when we first were newly married, and Marta would ask me to do something, and I would sometimes do it with my like shoulders like hunched over, like, you know, like to go help her like this. And I would do it as a young 22-year-old. I thought, man, I'm really doing a good job because I'm actually doing it. But I was communicating the opposite of wanting to do it by nonverbally. Body posture. By the way we listen or don't listen, we're communicating. By our presence or absence, with tears, with our silence, withdrawal. So we need to recognize this is something that is going on all the time. We're communicating nonverbally, giving people information, and they're either interpreting it accurately or they're not interpreting it accurately. And if verbal communication is hard, nonverbal is even harder. A second thing, it's continuous. A second thing we need to realize about it, and I kind of said this already, but it's powerful. It's powerful. And sometimes it's more powerful than our verbal communication, actually. God proved his love how? Not only by telling us, but by delivering his son up for us all. And we look at back to the cross that needed to be explained verbally, but that act gives us confidence as we look at it that God does love us and he's going to give us everything he promised to us. Titus 1:16 says, with their lips people profess to know God, but with their lives they deny it. So verbally, what they're saying is fine, but their nonverbal behavior actually overwhelms their verbal behavior. They deny it with their lives, and so their lips, what they say, is meaningless. James 2, lack of works is powerful evidence that people don't have faith, even though they say they do. 1 Timothy 5:8, the man who doesn't provide for his household has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Even though he may be accurate doctrinally, his failure, his nonverbal behavior, the failure to care for his family proves that he doesn't really believe what he says he believes. So sometimes nonverbal communication is actually more powerful than verbal communication. Sometimes it overpowers our verbal communication. So I read an article. A husband says to his wife, I love you. So he says with his mouth, I love you. And what does that mean? If you look it up in the dictionary, he's expressing affection. He is saying that he cherishes his wife, that he's attracted to his wife. So he says, I love you. We know what I love you means. But the wife responds coldly. And she says, I can't stand you. And she stamps out of the room, slamming the door behind her. And you think, how's that possible? I look up I love you in the dictionary, and she responds like that. What a terrible woman. Well, let me add a few details. The man has just returned home. He smells like alcohol. He looks angry. He sits down without a word, crosses his legs tightly, and starts reading the paper. His wife asks him how his day went. He answers with a grunt. She says, I want a divorce. He says, where's dinner? She says, I'm serious. I've had enough of you. I treat you well, and you treat me like a servant. I don't like you anymore. The man looks up from his distractions. There's a look of incomprehension on his face. He needs his wife. He's obviously afraid now. He doesn't want her to leave. Give me one reason why I shouldn't walk out of here tonight, she demands. Perspiration has appeared on his upper lip. He avoids her stare. His eyes dart around the room as if searching for an answer. Then he clears his throat and says with a grin, I love you? It's powerful. nonverbal communication. And sometimes it can overwhelm our what we say verbally. Often nonverbal communication says more about what's going on the inside than even our verbal communication. So John puts his hand on his head when he's stressed. Ralph pulls out his ear and rubs the back of his neck when he's being criticized. Our nonverbal behavior often reveals what's going on inside. And sometimes we might say, no, I'm not worried, and yet people can look at us, and it's clear from our nonverbal behavior that we actually are worried. Nonverbal behavior often helps me with myself, because I'm like, I'm not thinking worried thoughts, but my stomach is all in a knot. So I'm like, oh, I think I might be worried. I got to evaluate that a little more. And because we often communicate what's going on internally through our nonverbal communication, people often believe what you communicate nonverbally more than what you communicate verbally. So say a husband is late for a date, and his wife says, that's all right, I'm not angry. Yet when he goes to hug her, she pulls back from him and refuses his touch. And her face is set and unsmiling. Does the husband believe her words or her actions? It's kind of obvious that if he has any sympathy, he probably will believe her actions. Which makes the third principle especially important to understand, and that's the fact that our nonverbal communication is often misunderstood. So if we have a trouble communicating verbally and interpreting what people are saying to us verbally, we probably have even bigger problems interpreting what they're saying to us nonverbally. And there's a lot of illustrations of that. Jesus is sleeping on the boat, and what do his disciples think that nonverbal behavior means? They're like, don't you care? He's like, no, you guys don't have any faith. Martha's busy in the kitchen. She comes to Jesus, and he's not telling Mary to go help. And so she thinks, Jesus, what's the problem here? Don't you care that I'm having to work so hard in the kitchen? And he's like, no, that's not actually the issue. Jesus doesn't immediately come to Bethany when Lazarus needs his help. And Martha misunderstands that nonverbal communication. God not immediately punishing sin is often misunderstood. People are like, well, he must not care about sin. Hannah, she's in the praying, and Eli's like, are you drunk? And it's actually, he just hadn't seen somebody urgently pray in a long time. And she really was praying. Acts 2, the believers are speaking in tongues and miracles happening, and people are like, I think you must be drunk. So nonverbal, we need to know it's happening all the time, it's really powerful, and it's often misunderstood. So again, living overseas, we have so many illustrations of how nonverbal communication can be misunderstood. How people listened, how people show respect. But it's not just cross-cultural. I think sometimes cross-cultural is easier because you're like, I know I can't understand. So I'm just going to wait and gather information. But when you're in a similar culture, and if you're in a similar culture, a lot of times you think you know more than you actually know. One of the things that was harder, I often say was harder in South Africa, was there's the Afrikaans culture, and then there's like the African culture. And Afrikaans are like Dutch. Basically, their ancestors are Dutch, and they speak Afrikaans. And so when I moved to South Africa, the Afrikaans, I assumed their culture was closer to mine. And yet it was harder because it took me longer to understand the Afrikaans culture than it did the African culture, because the Afrikaans culture was just a step different than mine. And so I kept just missing the beat because it was close, but not quite. And so we don't just have different cultures here. We also have different family cultures. The funny story That's cross-cultural, I suppose. But the funny story where Matt was looking at that dad on that show, and he was saying, that dad's so tender. And I was looking at that dad and saying, that guy has to be the hardest guy I've ever seen. Resting faces, though, are hard to interpret, right? Like, I remember one time before I preached, a guy came up to me in Arkansas, and he's like, just so you know, I have a really angry-looking resting face. But I am not angry. I just am so happy to hear you preach. But just so you know, I thought, that's nice. Thank you for letting me know. Sometimes bored or angry can be hard. I often will ask, a couple of my girls have very, it almost looks like bored faces sometimes. And yet I'll ask them, are you bored? They're like, no, I'm not bored. I'm so happy. One of my daughters, she doesn't communicate much when she would get a present at Christmas. She'd be like, yeah, thanks. And I was like, wow, that was a big present, you know? And she would be so happy. She was really so happy, but she just didn't have much of a, her face didn't show much of that kind of happiness. And so we had to work. I said, well, you know, we need to work on this. When people give you presents, if they see you like that, they're probably going to think she doesn't really care. And so she's like, that was kind of an awkward conversation to work through, but we tried to work through how do we show, at least know that about yourself, so that you can understand why people might be confused. They did a most of us don't know very well. Like, they did a study where they had people try to act out different moods on videotape. So they'd say, be angry. Show me what it looks like when you're angry. Show me what it looks like when you're afraid. Show me what it looks like when you're happy. Show me what it looks like when you're sad. And then they let the people doing that watch the videos, the best ones. And they said, this is what I look like when I'm in one of these moods. That's me. That's when I'm angry. That's the one. That's right. And then they played the videotapes to big groups to figure out if the people watching would be able to see what the people were feeling accurately. And, you know, they only got about 2 out of 6 right. And they had one girl who, no matter what mood she tried to portray, every single time people said she was angry. So imagine how that would impact her life if every mood, she didn't know she was nonverbally communicating to people. They were interpreting her, this girl is so angry, and she's like really sad or afraid. So those are 4 principles to know about nonverbal behavior. What difference should it make? First of all, I think one practical difference is we should be a little self-aware. So each of us needs to try to learn how we're communicating nonverbally to others. And to do that, it helps to have big ears. Like, really try to pay attention. If people seem stressed out around you, it might be that you're nonverbally communicating something. If people continually are bringing up, like, certain things, it might be because you're, and you don't know why they're bringing them up, it might be because you're communicating something nonverbally. It's difficult to be self-aware when it comes to nonverbal behavior because people often don't tell us, and because we're pretty self-confident. So we're like, I'm great at nonverbal. Everybody knows I'm a nice guy. Everybody can tell that, of course, they can tell I'm happy. Why would anybody not think I'm happy? Proverbs 16:2 says, all the ways of a man are clean in his own eyes, and especially nonverbal. We're definitely sure that we're not miscommunicating that way. And so we should make a commitment, I think, to being humble and admitting we don't always know how we're communicating. So if somebody says something to me, I need to take it seriously. If somebody says, Pastor, you are intimidating. To me, that's always so funny because I'm like, how can I be intimidating? I can't even think of a way that I can be intimidating. But if somebody says that to me, I need to take that seriously. They might be telling me something about themselves, actually, and that's fine. But at least now I know something about the way people like that can read me. And I'm like, okay, there are people out there that can think that I'm intimidating or something like that. I haven't been told that too many times, but Be careful, though, not to always think it's just them, because we are good at deceiving ourselves. And we say one thing sometimes when inside it's different. And sometimes we don't always fully know. Like, I remember somebody asking me, did that bother you? And at the time, I was like, no, I don't think that bothered me. I'm really fine. And then about 3 months later, I was like, I think that bothered me. Like, I think that I wasn't very self-aware in that moment, that it actually impacted me more than I realized at the moment. I wouldn't have thought at that moment that it did, but we just don't know ourselves always as well and are not always processing as quickly. And so we should be humble and then also just open to help. We lie to others sometimes, we lie to ourselves. Proverbs 16:24 says, whoever hates disguises himself with his lips and harbors deceit in his heart. When he speaks graciously, believe him not. So we hide from others, we hide from ourselves. Sometimes we're angry and we're like, no, I'm not. Sometimes we're worried and we're like, no, I'm not. And so somebody brings up something about your nonverbal behavior. They may be wrong. They may be right. If you're going to be self-aware, realize you don't always know what you're communicating nonverbally. Listen to others and be humble enough to take seriously what they say. And even go a step further, because you don't have to wait, ask for help. And it's good to try to do this in families. You can ask, what's my resting face look like? How do I come across? My dad had a very serious look, and I was a wimpy kid, so I did not like people yelling or looking serious. My brother, when he played sports, if the coach yelled, he would play harder. If the coach yelled when I played sports, I would just go home. I couldn't, obviously, but I would want to. So my dad had a very serious face, and I used to think he was upset about something when he wasn't. And so what he did with me was he changed. He would come home and he would try to smile. And he would even put that in his sermons. He would, on his notes, he would say, smile here. So to me, it always looked kind of funny because I wouldn't know he's like, look up. But he's trying. he knows he looks serious. So, but he couldn't have changed if he was just like, ah, son, you, come on, grow up, get tougher. And I needed to get tougher, but he also helped me. We should seek to become self-aware. We should ask for help. Then another thing we should do is be verbal about our nonverbal communication. So make sure that you're willing to explain to others the meaning of behaviors that might be misunderstood. This is why those of you who aren't big talkers, you make life more difficult for yourself. Because people are always interpreting. And if you're not saying, they're really going to be interpreting wrongly a lot of times. And so you can really help yourself just by getting, like, if you love them, let them know you love them. If you're doing something and you're not angry and you know that sometimes you look angry, tell them that you're not angry. God explains his nonverbal behavior for us. He tells us the purpose of trials. He does this. So we should be careful from assuming that others understand. And you know what? If they think something communicates something, we can explain, and if necessary, change. We don't have to defend a certain way of looking if that's difficult for them. You know, we were reading yesterday in our devotions, Paul's like, to the Jews I became like a Jew, I can smile a lot if that was a culture that was really helpful. Yeah, if I go to a different culture and non-verbally some actions communicate something in that culture, I would have to give up. I would have to try as best as I could to change. If looking directly into people's eyes in a certain culture communicated disrespect, then I would need to learn to look down in that culture to help them. I mean, that's all kinds of stuff. I don't need to insist on my own way of nonverbal communication because it's not about me. It's about Christ. And that sounds so simple, but sometimes it's hard to do because it really feels right to you. Like, what's wrong with these people? Why this is what you should do when you are like this. But if it's not communicating what you want it to communicate, then really, what good is it doing you? Because nonverbal communication is significant and difficult, third, not only should we explain what we're doing, we need to refrain from jumping to conclusions about behaviors of other people that we might be inclined to interpret in a negative way. And then ask for clarification in a calm, non-threatening, and non-accusatory way. So you don't want to make the same mistake as Eli. He was sure he knew why Hannah was doing what she was doing, and he was totally wrong. And Jacob was wrong with Esau. So what we should do, if it's communicating something significant to us, and it's becoming a pattern that we're thinking about, and it, especially if it's impacting the way we're responding, before we just decide this is what it means, we should ask. Like, I notice, to me, this might surprise you, but it looks like you're not happy. And I wonder, are you experiencing joy? And the person's like, oh my goodness, I'm so happy. I'm experiencing a lot of joy right now. And then what do I have to do? I have to say, well, I can't see inside their heart. I'm going to trust that they're telling me the truth. And that's great. I guess I'm just not really that good at reading that person's face. They probably eventually should learn that, okay, just sitting there like this doesn't communicate to a lot of people in this culture, at least, joy. So maybe just give a little smile once in a while, and then people can then know. But that's not my responsibility. That's their responsibility. Now, if you're in a marriage relationship, you probably, especially if you're a husband, you're going to want to just change for your wife's good, and pray that God helps you. Sometimes recognize that how we interpret nonverbal behavior says more about us than it does the other person. Especially if we're a little insecure, and insecure is not a great word, but someone who isn't confident about God's love, what happens is they often read people's nonverbal behavior as a kind of attack or criticism, and then exaggerate what they're doing, and it can create conflicts and isolation where it doesn't need to. A lot of times when we're really self-focused and we like, kind of proud, then we are constant, since we're like the center of the story, like we're constantly so focused on what people, we're like hyper-focused on the way people are treating us and interpreting, and usually get really, really, really weird. But when you don't have to be the center of the story, you're not that important, then a lot of times you're not paying quite as much attention or doing so much interpreting. Though sometimes, you know, the opposite's true. Like, some people are really, really loving, and they really, really are paying attention to how people are non-verbally communicating because they care so much. And they just have to be careful. That's a really good quality that a lot of us could learn from, to actually notice nonverbal behavior. But maybe that person just needs to remember that just because you communicate something nonverbally doesn't mean that's what everybody else means by that nonverbal behavior. And so your heart might be right, like you really love them and you're paying attention, but you probably want to just be careful not to assume that you always know what the nonverbal behavior actually means. You know, sometimes when people are so loving to you and they think that you're like really bothered or something, and you're like, and they're really trying to be concerned, and you're like, oh man, I don't know what I'm doing that's making you feel bothered. Like, I'm bothered because I'm just so happy right now. But they're just so hyper loving that they like, I don't know, they're really paying it. You don't even know exactly what you're communicating nonverbally. Fourth, we need to make sure, our fifth, I don't know what I said, where we're right now. We need to learn not to make mountains out of molehills and to refrain from making everything a gigantic issue, especially in reference to nonverbal behavior that we're tempted to interpret negatively. So we should remember we might be misunderstanding. We should refrain from personalizing everything the other person does and thinking of every undesirable behavior as saying something about us. You know, the person who comes to church and they're so sure that somebody looked at them angrily and that other person wasn't thinking about them at all. Like they just had a bad breakfast or something, a stomach ache. But that person's like walking through so focused on themselves that everybody's look means something. That was really helped me overcome fear of man with teaching, was when I realized most people don't care that much about me. So I used to be so scared of coming up and talking, you know, because I thought, oh man, people are going to be thinking about this for so long if I mess up. And then I realized, no, most people just like go home. They'll be like, he was goofy, and then they don't care for it. They'll be moving on to something totally different. I'm not that important for them to think about for very long. So what often happens is someone looks a certain way, does something, then the other person sees, interprets what they're doing, and they start feeling certain things, making certain plans, and then they react. But what needs to happen is when interpret what somebody's doing and it starts to bother us, we need to pray and ask God, what do you want me to do here? And then two, we should ask for clarification before we respond. And then another thing we can do, because nonverbal behavior is so important, is practice. So try to become better at nonverbal communication. So you might just talk with your family and say, is there anything I communicate with my eyes that may hinder our relationship? Is there anything I communicate by my body posture? Is there anything I communicate with what I do with my time? Is there anything I communicate with what I laugh at or how I laugh? There's somebody I know that whenever he tells jokes, he just has a very condescending way of telling jokes. And his laugh is very tempting to think that he's not laughing with you, but he's laughing at you. And he could do a little better listening when somebody tells him that. But that's a harder one for him to process. But by what I do with my arms or my hands, by my presence, just ask your family. Then think about what you could do in the area of nonverbal communication to improve your relationship. So you might make a list of ways you can say I love you without saying a word. And at the end of the day, think back and recall, how did you say I love you, I care for you, I respect you without saying a word to other family members? Now, ladies, if you're doing that, you probably want to, you know, at some point tell your husband that you are saying that. I remember Marty used to, when we first got married, would buy me a lot of clothes as a way of saying I love you. And I wasn't noticing because I didn't think much of clothes. So at that point. And then she's like, but this is a way of saying I love you. And then I'm like, oh, okay. Awesome. You could finish the sentence, I can please my family, and then finish it with a nonverbal behavior. And then as you think about your nonverbal behavior, think about what it says about your heart. Because sometimes it's a matter of skill, but sometimes we communicate nonverbally the way we do because of something going on with our heart. So when Marty used to ask me to take out trash, I would sigh automatically, and that felt involuntary, especially when it happened during a sporting event. And then she would say, you know, when you sigh, that makes me feel like you don't want to do it. And I would say, this is just what Brian Sayers, that really, we were watching a video of somebody explaining it, and it definitely happened in my life. And I would say to Marta, I don't think I can overcome that sigh. I think that is just a physical reaction. Well, we were just young. I was 22, so I didn't know anybody. I'm taking the trash out. That means I love you. But really, it was a reflection of selfishness in my heart. I wouldn't have sighed if loving Marta in that moment meant more than the sporting event. So that was communicating something, and I had to repent. Or when I used to shake when I would go to speak, my hands would shake. That nonverbal behavior felt like I couldn't overcome it. But it was connected to what I believed. And so it took a long time, but I overcame, the Lord helped me overcome that by thinking something different. It was revealing what was going on in my heart. And so you need to at least ask, what does this behavior say about what's important to me, about who is Lord of my life? And all this is important because ultimately, if the nonverbal behavior is ungodly, then change has to begin in your heart, and a change of heart is only accomplished through confession of sin, repentance, faith in Christ and his cleansing blood, and planning a new way of living and continuously putting that new plan into practice. So this was kind of for free tonight. It's not in War of Words, but we'll get back to the next chapter next time. But I thought, you know, nonverbal behavior actually is pretty significant and not something that we talk about very much, and yet does impact our relationships.